Hello, and welcome to the Physical Preparation Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Robertson, and I'll be joined on the line later today by Greg Everett. Before we get into this week's show, I want to give you guys a little weekly recap. I will be brief, but man, you know, sometimes things are going good, and right now I just feel like things are going really good in all aspects of life. IFAST, crushing it. We've had a lot of interest here lately, a lot of new people that are interested in coming on board and kind of training the IFAST way. So I'm really excited about that. The team has been working really hard together. We're, you know, just kind of punching through some new concepts that Bill has come up with and really trying to put those through the ringer because, look, man, I'm all for new ideas, but before you start putting it out there, whether it's, you know, on the internet or with your clients, I think it's really imperative that you own those concepts. So it's been really fun. We're really diving in deep here and using a lot of brain power, but I think we're really going to come out on the other end of this with some cool stuff. So IFAST is killing it. My boy, Jalen Robinson, if you guys got to watch the AAF this past weekend, they had their like inaugural weekend, and Jalen plays for the San Diego Fleet. So awesome dude. His brother, Glenn Robinson, actually referred him to me, and man, it was just so much fun training Jalen. Nobody is going to ever confuse me for being like a hardcore football guy, but I've had a little bit of success training some football bros along the way, and I really hope that, you know, Jalen's one of them because, man, awesome dude. He played great the other night, and man, those guys are just fun. They are fun to train. They are strong, athletic, powerful humans. And Jalen, if you follow me on the gram, you'll know he is definitely a freakishly strong mutant of a human being. So excited for him. And then, man, you know, the rest of the weekend was pretty chill. So that is what I have. Now, here's what I want to talk about today. And, you know, I hope this doesn't turn into like a ramble or a rant, but I want to tell you a little bit about my day and then, you know, just kind of put this back on you because I would love to hear your thoughts on this. But, you know, as I mentioned up front, we've got a lot of young athletes that are interested in coming and training at IFAST. And I mean, we're talking everything from 11 and 12 up to 17, 18, getting ready to go to college. And it just so happens that two of the parents that I talked to today, their kids were coming to us because they were coming off not just injuries, but they were coming off surgeries. So we had an 18-year-old girl, basketball player. She was coming off a lower back surgery. And then I spoke to a mom later in the day, and her 13-year-old daughter was coming off an ACL tear and repair and surgery and all that good stuff. So, you know, the reason I tell you this is, I mean, it's just so disheartening to me as a parent, as a coach, to hear the way these parents talk about these things. And it's, look, nobody's blaming the parents, right? What makes me sad is the fact that it feels like everybody involved in sports now is just so reserved to the fact that these major catastrophic injuries have to happen. You know, I mean, both the parents, it's just like, yeah, you know, it's just, it's part of sports. And on one hand, I agree. You know, I've got kids, you know, when I took Kendall to the batting cage the other day, a ball hit her in the hand. You know, she's upset. She's crying. And I have to explain to her, look, sometimes you get hurt in sports. You know, but that's one thing, getting hit with a softball. It's another when, you know, you're 13 years old and you have to repair an ACL. And so, again, it's not expressing concern from the parent's side. It's just, man, it sucks that this is the state of our society, of our profession, that these kids now at 12, 13, 14 years old are dealing with major surgeries that are going to impact them for the rest of their life. And let's be honest. You know, this is assuming that they've got, you know, they get really good rehab, that they're going to get really good training. I'd like to think if they're coming to us, they're going to get world-class training, and we're going to get them back to the highest levels, not only of sport, but of function, both now and in the future. This is the frustration for me, is it's not just Indianapolis or Fishers or Carmel, Indiana. This is nationwide where we're dealing with this. And, you know, I wish I had the solution. And I think a lot of people will try and put it on one thing, right? It's early specialization. Or, oh, you know, they play sports year round now. Or, oh, you know, whatever. They're in the weight room too much. Man, it's like anything else in life. All these things are multifactorial. Could they rotate sports throughout the year? Sure. Could they take more breaks throughout the year and just do free play? Sure. Could they probably get better instruction or better programming from their weights class? Sure. But again, this is the frustration on my end, is there isn't one thing. There's not one thing you can point to and say, oh, if we fix X, then we're going to see ACL tears go down, or we're going to see fewer kids that have major catastrophic injuries and or surgeries when they're in middle or high school. So what I want to do is I want to put this back to you. You know, what can we do collectively as a profession to take this to the next level? How can we start to get a grasp on what's going on? And I'm an optimist. I am ever the optimist. So if somebody's going to raise their hand and say, man, I think we can do better, I'm that person. And I hope you are too. So again, I'm going to put this back to you. What can we do better? How can we improve our profession? How can we better educate the athletes, the parents, the coaches, so that we start to hopefully curtail this to some degree and we start to, you know, think about the long-term ramifications of these injuries on the health and wellness of our young people. And I will tell you one thing that we're going to do. You know, it was actually Bill's idea. And the thing that I love about Bill, when he's got a great idea, he's rolling. And so a couple weeks ago, we had yet another kid that came to him, I believe, for physical therapy. He's like, man, we just need to do a clinic on how to teach kids how to lift. I know this is something that Travis Mash has done. It's something I think we're going to start doing every month now, but it's a very simple one-hour seminar on a Saturday. We're going to call it a Learn to Lift. And we're going to teach these kids, look, you're whatever, 12, 13, 18, whatever age you are, we're going to teach you the basics of how to move properly. We're going to teach you how to squat. We're going to teach you how to hinge. We're going to teach you some of the basic Olympic lifts if we got Rufus there. You know, like these are things, like it or not, these kids are going to go into their weight room at eighth or ninth grade, and they're going to start performing these lifts, you know, and fortunately, there are some great coaches out there. You know, when I hear guys like Gary Schofield, Mike Snyder, Fred Eves, these guys have been in the trenches. They're doing great things at the high school level. But we also have to be cognizant of the fact that not everybody is. So not every kid is going to get that level of attention to detail. They're not going to get that level of coaching. So I think if you have some way to impact these kids, it can absolutely make a huge difference. And I'll be honest, I don't know how we're going to do it eventually. It's still kind of marinating and percolating in my skull. But man, it's either going to be free or it's going to be like 10 bucks. And honestly, I don't even care if we get kids into one of our programs from it. If we do, that's awesome. I'm obviously not going to turn away business. But I think this is one of those things where we can make a really positive impact. And even if none of the kids that don't come to our clinic sign up, just the fact that we're giving back and we're putting our names out there and we're trying to make a positive, you know, a positive difference in these kids' lives, I think it's going to come back to us tenfold. So my friends, that's what I want you to think about this week. And again, I don't know what I want you to do. If you're on social, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and you hear this, hit me up. Let me know what you're thinking. You know, leave a comment in the website and just let me know what you're thinking and what you feel like you can do to make our kids live happier, healthier lives via smart strength training. So that does it for me. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll jump into the show with Greg.
Are you ready to level up your program design game? Not a day goes by when I don't get an email, tweet, or instant message from a trainer or coach who wants to improve their program design skills. And while I cover a ton of this in my Physical Preparation 101 product, there's obviously levels and depths that I simply can't go into there. Which is why I created the RTS Program Design Mentorship, to help motivated trainers and coaches who are serious about creating the best possible program and give them an all-access pass to my program design process. Over 6 months, we will cover every topic imaginable, from selecting the right resets and breathing exercises, to creating speed and agility programs, to dialing in and tightening the screws on your strength training programs. Quite simply, I've made it a goal to leave no stone unturned when it comes to writing an awesome program. And beyond the monthly content, we'll also have coaching calls every 4 weeks and weekly check-ins to make sure that everyone who joins the mentorship levels up their program design skills. If you're interested in learning more, the process will start immediately and go through February 18th. If you'd like to learn more about the mentorship, please email me directly at mike@robertsontrainingsystems.com with the words program design in the subject line. Once I receive your email, I'll send you more information and we'll take it from there. But remember, there's a very short window to apply. So if you're interested, please email me ASAP at mike@robertsontrainingsystems.com. Thanks so much, and I look forward to working with you. Greg Everett is the owner of Catalyst Athletics, head coach of the USA weightlifting national champion team Catalyst Athletics, author of the books Olympic Weightlifting and Olympic Weightlifting for Sports, director, writer, producer, editor, and everything in between of the documentary American Weightlifting, co-host of the Weightlifting Life podcast, and publisher of the Performance Menu Journal. Greg is also a fifth place finisher at the USAW National Championships, Masters National Champion, Masters American Open Champion, Masters American Record Holder in the Clean and Jerk, and Olympic Trials Coach. In this show, Greg and I talk about the changes he's seen in the Olympic lifting culture over the past decade, his thoughts on coaching newbies both online and in person, and his response when people say that, quote, coaching the lifts takes too much time, unquote. It was really great catching up with Greg, and I think there's some awesome back and forth in this show. But enough for me, let's do this. Greg, man, thanks so much for coming on the show here today. It's great to catch up with you after a couple years. Could you start by just telling us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Well, thanks for having me back. We were just talking about it's been a few years, so yeah. I'm excited to get back and not miss our appointment this time. But I own a company called Catalyst Athletics, which is also a USA weightlifting team, overwhelmingly women, and that's just how it's been through no conscious intention. For the last 10 plus years, that's just kind of how it's shaken out. So we are a national championship team. We won in 2016, come up really close a couple more times, but, we've got, lifters who have made, you know, multiple international teams, you know, national record holders. We've got a couple, you know, really gunning for the Olympics. So, My wife and I both coach the lifters. We kind of each have our lifters, and we help with each other's lifters here and there. So it's a family affair for sure.
Yeah.
And Catalyst Athletics, we just focus on putting out educational material for the sport of weightlifting, both for coaches and athletes. And so that includes quite a few books at this point. Including a couple of my own, a ton of website content, you know, articles, videos, exercise library, all kinds of stuff like that. So really, I just my intent is to be, you know, the most kind of thorough, reliable source for that information online.
I love that, man. And what originally led you to the world of physical preparation? Like, how did you get started in all this?
It was something that always attracted me from as an age as I can remember. I mean, I always had, before I was really able to go to a real gym, like a grown up, you know, I was always training in my garage as a young kid and trying to figure out how to make equipment.
Right.
You know, I remember, and I know lots of people have done this over the years, but I remember trying to figure out how to build a cable machine and stuff like that. And,
that's awesome.
You know, looking back, they were pretty sketchy, but you know, it was something fun. And, you know, whatever gear, dumbbells, barbells, anything I could get my hands on, I was all over it. And I did, you know, I was always involved in a pretty broad range of sports, you know, all the traditional, you know, baseball, basketball, soccer, everything like that, to the more obscure. Like I rode competitive bike trials for a while. I was a skateboarder, you know, things like that. So I was always kind of out there and trying to experience as much of that kind of physical activity and physical training world. And, you know, weightlifting specifically just kind of fell into my lap at the right time. And really attracted me just because it kind of encompassed all the things that I really enjoyed. It was kind of the combination of training and competition. It was all kind of one thing wrapped up into a sport. So I think it had that unique appeal for me.
I think that was how powerlifting was for me as well. It was kind of like a natural extension. You right. know, it's like you've done team sports. And obviously you love team sports, right? But there's pros and cons to it. And if you like working out, it's like a natural, logical extension, because like now I can train, but I can also compete in what exactly. I'm training as well. So cool, man. Yeah. And last but not least, give us kind of your career path, because obviously we know where you are now, but kind of walk us through like the different steps that you went through and, you know, the gym and everything else that kind of got you to where you're at today.
Well, it's been a fairly meandering, chaotic, largely accidental path, to be honest. I mean, I was a certified personal trainer, you know, while I was still in high school, right when I turned 18, I did that whole thing. And I pretty quickly discovered that that really wasn't the environment and the kind of clientele I wanted to be working with. But, you know, at that time, the internet wasn't really a thing quite yet. You know, it was like AOL, and there were, you know, three websites yeah. and they were all about, you know, stocks, and, you know, it was like stock checking sites and eBay. It was pretty much right. the whole internet at that point. So I didn't really know what was out there, and I didn't know kind of the right people at that time. So I largely lost interest in that training, you know, as a profession thing, because I just didn't know what I could do. And so I kind of ended up, you know, going to school, at a couple different places. And I was working on an ambulance, in Northern California, up in Chico, and met Rob Wolf, of paleo mm-hmm. diet fame. And, I met him through a guy he was sharing space with, a Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy named John Frankel, who I started training with and trade for web design, because I was also doing that to support myself. I always had like two or three jobs at once because I didn't want to have one serious job. But
yeah.
And so I met Rob, and of course anyone who knows Rob knows he's is a super friendly, generous, you know, really sharp guy. And we hit it off, and you know, I said, hey, you know, come train with me. And he had this little space in the back of a jiu-jitsu gym with some rubber mats, you know, some pull-up structure, a rope, you know, a barbell that actually spun, which I hadn't had access to in a while. And so, you know, my initial skepticism, you know, at the time I had a power rack and a bar in the bedroom of my apartment, and that's kind of just where I trained. That's what I was doing. But very quickly I kind of got into what Rob was up to at the time, and ended up partnering with him in that gym, which was CrossFit NorCal. It was the fourth CrossFit affiliate gym in the world.
Wow.
It was a very different time yes. in the CrossFit world.
Yeah.
I mean, we were literally begging people to train with us, and convincing them, no, this isn't really stupid and dangerous. You should try it. and so that's where I kind of got re-exposed to the sport of weightlifting. Which I had kind of dabbled in high school, but I didn't have access to anybody who could really teach me. You know, I'm trying to figure it out from weird things, you know, like books like we had in the olden days. Mm-hmm. You couldn't go on YouTube and how do you snatch? And I didn't know what was going on. So I kind of saw snatch and clean and jerk as the same as, you know, squat, deadlift. They were just these other barbell lifts. And I kind of knew them rudimentarily, but didn't really understand what the sport was about. And finally, I hooked up with Mike Bergner, who was a really well-known and successful weightlifting coach at the time. And he was one of the early guys who got involved in CrossFit. So it kind of all these different things converged at once. And I was just really fortunate to be in the right place at the right time and run into people like Rob and Coach Bergner. And so from there, I moved down to Southern California to train with him, met my wife, who was a weightlifter under him, and he claims that he set us up. I'm not entirely sure, but I give credit for it. And so, you know, after having owned that gym with Rob, you know, my wife and I moved back up to the San Francisco Bay Area where I'm from, and we opened up the original Catalyst Athletics gym in 2008. Ran that in two different locations until 2016, when we decided it was time to get out of that business and get out of the hectic Bay Area and focus on kind of the education side of the business, which had always been like the bigger thing. And that was really more what I was interested in.
Yeah.
The gym business was – was really a way to subsidize a gym for a weightlifting team to train in.
Yes.
You know, because especially at that time, even far more so than now, you could not have a financially viable weightlifting gym. It was impossible. It's a little different now, but still not easy to do. Right. And I would still argue impossible in most locations. But in any case, we ended up in Central Oregon, pretty much in the middle of nowhere, converted our really big garage into a gym. And so we coach a lot of our lifters remotely. A lot of they'll come and do training camps here. You know, we'll put them up in the house and train them for a week at a time. And so that's really where we are now is you know, kind of focusing on the parts of it that we love. And we're fortunate enough to have a well enough established business and extremely low overhead, because I do everything myself, that we have the flexibility to do it the way we're doing it now.
Yeah, I just love that story, man. It's so cool. It's so, like we talked about before the show, like I wonder how many coaches are going to hear this and be like, damn, I wish I could do that.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm sure a lot of us have had that thought, like, man, I just love to go off the grid and just have a training space and be able to train myself and a few people. Yep. So that's awesome.
Well, and I think, you know, as well as I do, and I'm sure you experience this a lot of the time, and most coaches and trainers, you know, we get into that industry because we like coaching people, not because we necessarily enjoy running a gym business.
Yes.
And they're two very different things. And, you know, one of them really kind of fuels you, as exhausting as it can be, and the other one just kind of drains you. So it can be a really tough balancing act.
That's so true. So talk to me about the culture around Olympic weightlifting over the past 10 years, because I could be wrong, but it just seems as though a ton more people are interested in Olympic lifting now versus 10, 15 years ago.
Oh yeah. It's not even a contest. It's grown so much. And I will give a ton of that credit for the CrossFit community. Mm-hmm. I mean, that really exposed so many people to the snatch and clean and jerk. I think a good chunk of them, I think a natural progression for a lot of CrossFitters is, you know, they find CrossFit, it's this new exciting thing. It teaches them all these different skills, but it also exposes them to things like weightlifting or powerlifting, which they may not have ever found themselves. And then if they kind of, you know, there's a shelf life for CrossFit itself for a lot of people, because they want to move on to something more specific or more challenging skill wise or more specific. And so they'll go into one of those sports. And so I think that's really what has largely fueled weightlifting. And then of course you add the ubiquity of social media, and that helps quite a bit too. I think those two things, the CrossFit explosion and social media, definitely, the social media was required for CrossFit to blow up the way it did, and for weightlifting to kind of ride on those coattails. So the difference culture wise though, is that, you know, previously you had this really kind of insular community of weightlifting where, people didn't really kind of get out there and share it with people, and no one knew how to access it. They didn't know what it was. It was this weird thing that weird people did in their garages. Because, you know, there weren't gyms where people did this by and large. There were, you know, a handful of them around the country. And now it's something that, I mean, grandmas are in a CrossFit gym snatching and clean and jerking, which you know, even 5 years ago, that was kind of borderline, but 10 years ago, it was just unheard of, except for a handful of, you know, lunatic masters who are out there. So it kind of changed in a sense where I think there's a lot more people who are just casually involved versus previously it was almost entirely competitive athletes. And so that's definitely a change where you have people who are like, well, you know, I don't really care too much about doing this perfectly. I just kind of want to go have fun. I'm not going to compete. It's just an activity I enjoy. I enjoy learning a little bit about it, but I'm not sitting here committing my life and you know, refusing to walk more than 200 yards a day to save my legs, you know, all these things that the more fanatical competitive lifters are looking at and saying, well, why are you bothering if you're going to go ride your bike for 20 miles on Saturday, you know, whatever the case is. So it's a very different audience now. But, you know, good for me, since my business is predicated on teaching people how to do stuff, there's a lot more people who want to do, you know, learn to do that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's definitely kind of where I expected that question to go, because I just feel like it or not, like CrossFit has just brought so much awareness to the act of Olympic lifting, and therefore has spurned so many more people into wanting to learn the lifts, which, like you said, hey man, that's great for your business. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, of course you have, the handful of curmudgeons out there who will just never give CrossFit credit or have nothing but complaints about it. And there certainly are certain drawbacks to it. Sure. You know, I'm not a complete idiot, I'm not oblivious to those things, but I think the benefit definitely outweighs the drawbacks. And the reality is that this is what it is now. So you can either kind of get on board and contribute to helping new people kind of assimilate into the sport and teach them, you know, certain things regarding etiquette and kind of competition protocol and things like that, rather than just kind of looking at them saying, hey, you guys are jerks, you know, get out of here.
Yeah,
it's not helpful. I mean, you look at the depth of talent that we have in this country now with our top competitive weightlifters is insane compared to 10 years ago. I mean, the battles that there are for making a world team or a Pan Am team are so much harder and so much tighter. Whereas 10 years ago, you kind of knew who was going to always make the team.
Right.
There were, you know, this handful of men and women. Yeah, they're going to make the world team. Yeah, they're going to make Pan Am team. Now it's like, I don't know, man. There's eight 58s, well, now 59s, who could potentially make that team. So it's definitely a lot more pressure and a lot more competition. And of course, anyone who's been in a competitive sport knows that that tends to push performances, you know, to greater and greater levels. So it's for the sport overall in this country, it's been a definite improvement.
For sure. Okay. So one thing that I have heard, at least since I've been in the Iron Game, so 20 plus years, is that, you know, the old saying, the Olympic lifts take too long to coach. So what would your response as an Olympic weightlifting coach be to that statement?
I'd say it really depends on the circumstances. It depends on the athlete or group of athletes. It depends on the coach's experience. It depends on kind of the how much time you have with the athletes, what that time has to be dedicated to in total. And I think that in most cases, you can teach athletes and groups of athletes at least some variation of an Olympic lift. And it's worthwhile to do so for nearly any athlete, especially any ground-based athlete. You look at guys like Joe Ken, who is now the strength coach for the Carolina Panthers. Dane Miller, who, you know, has worked with a ton of, you know, like world-class wrestlers and, you know, a bunch of athletes from various sports. And guys like that are proving that Olympic lifts and their variations can translate to huge performance gains. And it's not, you know, people kind of look at it and say, oh, well, it's just for power, you know, explosiveness. But it's not just that. It's there's so many things you can derive from those. Of course, there's the explosiveness, but there's also, you know, the skill component and basically the ability to learn new skills, which of course translate to learning other new skills, such as your sport-specific skills. There's things like, you know, general kind of strength and stability of your trunk, shoulders in particular, and then the ability to kind of absorb and then especially absorb and redirect force, which again, for a ground-based athlete is, you know, one of the top abilities that you need to have to be effective. So if you are very familiar with the lifts, I think it's relatively easy to kind of break them down and to determine, all right, what can I teach this group of athletes in a reasonable amount of time so that we can actually benefit from it in training versus spending, you know, an entire season or an entire semester or whatever you're working with, just teaching them the lifts to the point where they can actually use them effectively. If you have to spend 6 months just teaching one lift before you can actually train it, it's maybe not the best choice. But, you know, you can teach kids how to do a hang power clean or a hang power snatch pretty quickly if they're, you know, reasonably if they're athletes with reasonable, you know, athletic foundations.
So I'm going to put you on the spot here just because you're the guy for this, right? So let's say you get a group of athletes that come to you and they do have an athletic foundation, but they have no experience with the lifts. Maybe would you just walk us through what day one would look like if you want to teach them to snatch or clean, either one, or jerk, doesn't matter. How is your progression going to start with them? Because I think that's something that a lot of the listeners are interested in, right? Like, they may not want to take this to the nth degree. They're not going to go compete in a meet or something like that, but they want to feel more comfortable learning the lifts or teaching it to their athletes. So how Right. would you start somebody that you're working with?
So let's say, you know, I want to try teaching them a power clean. I'm either going to know if these athletes are already capable of doing a decent front squat, or I'm going to find out first. That'll be the first thing I do.
Okay.
There's no point in teaching an Olympic lift if the athlete can't establish, you know, a solid, safe receiving position.
Yeah.
And so if we're doing power cleans, we don't even need a full front squat. But what we need is for them to be able to establish a rack position where that bar is supported by the shoulders, and it's safe on the elbows and the wrists. So once we've established that, which, you know, for there's going to be some athletes who kind of self-select out of that on day one because of, you know, severe immobility or, you know, past injuries. So that's something obviously you have to kind of work around with, you know, on an individual basis. But generally speaking, you should be okay. Then I'm going to teach them something really basic, like here's your hang position with the bar at the knee. Right. So, you know, shins approaching vertical, hips are back, you know, weight is balanced across the whole foot, arms are long, bars right against the body, back is set tightly. Right. So pretty straightforward position. And then I'm going to teach them how to do a basic pull from that hang position. So really, it's as simple as pushing against the ground with your legs, just like you're going to do a jump, and guiding the bar towards your body the whole time, right? So instead of letting the bar move away or bounce away, you're just keeping it against the body. So there's your basic, you know, second pull of the power clean. They already have the receiving position. So then I'm going to teach them basically how they pull under the bar into that receiving position. So just from a tall standing position, depending on kind of how skilled you determine the athletes can be, you can break it down into multiple steps or you can just go for it. So we would do what I'd call a tall power clean. So just from a long arm standing position, they're going to pull the elbows up and out to the sides and then spin them around the bar to get into that rack position that we've practiced while moving their feet and moving down into a quarter squat position.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, that's just not happening, or you know it's not going to happen, you can break it down into smaller sections. So have them practice that pull of the elbows up and out in isolation. You know, a couple things like that, doing basically like a tall muscle clean where you do just the upper body motion without moving down. And then you just put it together. And, you know, I think that when you break it into those little pieces, it becomes a lot less overwhelming for an athlete and for a coach who's maybe not, you know, intimately familiar with the lifts.
Yeah.
And again, I think what it comes down to is take a look at each position and just ensure that that athlete can achieve that position safely. Mm-hmm. And you've seen as many as I have, you know, the classic high school football player power clean. Where Yes. you just wonder, you know, what is this coach thinking allowing this kind of stuff to go on, where it's such an unnecessary risk. And all you really have to do is bring that weight down a little bit. And I would argue you're going to get more benefit because you're going to have more speed involved. And the risk is going to drop, you know, astronomically because you're ensuring proper, safe, stable positions for that athlete.
Man, there was a video circulating a while back. I think Travis Mash posted it. I don't know where he got it from, but he tagged me in it on Twitter. And I bet there were 500 retweets and 2,000 likes, and it should have been dislikes. But it was this kid, had to be a high school kid. I mean, literally, I don't know how this kid finished this lift. I bet it was a 20-second Olympic lift from the time he cleaned it, got just to the basement, and then somehow stood up with it. And like the caption was something like, this is why we need high school strength coaches. And it's like, you know, just like you said, it's like, man, a lot of times the lifts get a bad rap, just like squatting right. or deadlifting or any lift for that matter, right? But it's so frustrating that, you know, that is pointed to as, oh, look, this is the problem. Like, no, that's not the problem. It's the coaches that's allowing that to go on that are the problem.
Exactly. You can make anything physical dangerous if you do it poorly. Look at Olympic speed walkers. They have like bilateral hip replacements, you know, and that's walking.
Yeah.
Like you can screw anything up if you decide to do it poorly.
Yes. Yes, you can. And luckily, or maybe not so much, we see that more often than we'd like, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So one other thing I wanted to talk to you about, because this is always fascinating to me, and it's probably going to be more of a two-part question. But so that's when you have somebody with you, right? Now let's assume you're going to start coaching somebody on the internet. And obviously, that's a totally different ballgame, right? So like, number one, how do you get that person started? And number two, like, obviously, video is a huge thing now, but like, how do you go about coaching these people? Because, you know, the one downside to the internet, unless you're like Skyping with somebody live, right, is you don't get the instantaneous feedback, right, on right. a rep. So like, talk me through how that works for you a little bit, because again, I know lots of people are trying to get into the online game and they want to do online coaching. So like, how does that look for you? Because this is obviously a very technically dependent sport.
Yeah, it's I have very mixed feelings about the whole thing, to be perfectly honest.
Yep.
I think the number one thing is that all the athletes that I coach remotely, I did not teach them from day one remotely.
Yeah.
In other words, okay. they're either athletes that started with me in person in the gym before we moved, or they're lifters that, you know, were already lifters before I took over their coaching.
Okay. That's
so in other words, I'm not teaching them from step zero.
Yeah.
We're kind of refining existing technique. So that right there makes it much easier and more reasonable to do, you know, via text and video, which is the way I do it most of the time. And the instantaneous feedback thing is definitely makes it difficult. It's very hard. You know, you get a video 6 hours after the fact. Okay, well, next time, you know,
yeah.
in 2 days or 3 days or a week or whatever, I want you to focus on doing this, this, and this. And it's like, okay, well, you can say that, but they have to remember that or write it down. And
right.
And then they have to try to do that and then send you a video and get feedback on whether or not they actually did it correctly later again. So it does right. make it very difficult. And it certainly slows the process down. There's no question about that. I think one of the biggest differences is that you have to rely more on corrective exercises versus concepts and cues. And that's something I do with people who train with me in person also, because the more I can get the person's conscious brain out of the process, the better it works usually.
Right.
Especially when you're working with adults, they just have this tendency to really overthink and overcomplicate things and then, you know, frustrate themselves and work themselves into a lather because they don't get it perfectly. But I understand it. I don't know why I can't do it.
Well, right.
Okay. Yeah, it's not just not how it works. I understand how to snatch 200 kilos, but I can't do it. So that's part of it too, is okay, what are exercises I can give this person that they would be very hard for them to screw up, you know, and that will kind of help fix this technique issue, whatever it is. And yeah. so that's kind of the way I'm looking at it. As far as starting someone new, it's definitely tougher to do. I would much rather do it in person, but if you had to do it remotely, I think the big thing is, even more than you would in person, starting with very basic fundamental exercises and making sure those are dialed in and consistent. So your back squat, your front squat, like a clean deadlift, and a snatch deadlift, overhead squat, you know, a press. And when you have those things in order, learning snatch and clean and jerk becomes infinitely easier.
Yeah.
You know, if you're trying to teach someone how to get a bar from the floor into a snatch receiving position and they've never even done an overhead squat or like a, you know, a snatch deadlift, it's just way too much to do at one time. So you really, really have to break it down into segments and then introduce those segments over a longer period of time.
Yeah.
And the issue with that, of course, is that people don't typically have the patience for that kind of approach.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I want to circle back, because something you said about programming really stood out. Like, one of the issues that I had, because I've done online coaching for, I don't know, 12, 13 years now, is my rationale was, if a dude is in Japan, which, Mark, if you're listening, thank you. Mark has been with me like 11 or 12 years now. Like, he was my first online client. It's been forever. But literally, he's in Japan. So my rationale was always like, look, I'm going to choose better exercises that are better suited for this guy than he's going to be able to choose either on his own or some random trainer is going to choose for him.
Right.
Right. So it's just interesting hearing you say that, because obviously we change and we evolve as we do this. But I mean, that's what I always come back to. And now, with video, it definitely takes it up a notch, right? Because, right. I mean, when I started, it was like a typed background from them in Word, and then like static posture pictures. And that's right. What I would like base their program off of. So it's just interesting.
And I just hope they're doing what you think.
Right. You're like crossing your fingers, like praying to the weightlifting gods that they're doing things correctly.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because that is something I've always come back to. It's like exercise selection. I think a lot of times people are just like, oh, whatever. It's like, it's just an exercise, but it's really not. Like, if you're choosing better exercises that are better suited for that person, or they meet them where they're at with regards to movement skill, that can make a big impact on how they perform.
Oh yeah. And you know, I have that experience with the people that I coach in person too, is, okay, well, we can sit here and snatch them to death and I'll just talk them through these changes that they need to make. Or I can continue cueing them when they're snatching, but let's introduce some other, you know, either variations of the lift or segments of the lift, you know, whether it's, you know, pauses during the pull or it's a complex or, you know, whatever the case is. That kind of gets their mind off of it a little bit and kind of just gives their body a chance to experience what it's supposed to be doing. And that of course, I think will pretty much always translate into faster progress than just trying to talk them through the changes.
Oh my gosh. I'm so glad you said that too, because I know I was definitely guilty of that back in the day. It's like, man, I know I've got the right cue for this person.
Right.
Sometimes they just need to like feel it out and screw it up a couple of times, obviously in a safe environment. Yeah. You know, you don't want somebody getting hurt on your watch, but man, sometimes you just got to shut up and let them try and like
absolutely
make some mistakes.
And the other thing too is with something like weightlifting, that where the skill is inextricably linked to the physical capacity. In other words, you can know how to do something technically, but if you don't have, you know, the postural strength to maintain the correct positions and to do that, you cannot do it.
You know,
maybe you can do it at 40 kilos, but you can't do it at 100 kilos. And so that's another big part of it, is that, okay, well, this lifter is incapable of staying over the bar during the pull of a snatch high enough. They just do not have the postural strength. So let's introduce, you know, halting snatch deadlifts or segment snatch deadlifts, slow eccentrics, you know, things like that, and you know, force them to strengthen that posture. Well, then you don't even really have to talk to them too much about it, because now their body can naturally maintain those positions, where you can tell them till they're blue in the face, you need to stay over the bar longer. They can't physically do it. So there's no point. You're just wasting your breath.
That's
and of course they get frustrated because they're trying, you know, coach, I'm trying to stay over the bar.
Right.
You know, and it's your job as a coach to realize, oh, I probably shouldn't just keep, you know, beating up on them for that. They cannot do it.
Right. Well, and so this leads me to another thought of, like you said, instead of cueing them, this probably works really well. If you explain to them the outcome, like, this is what I want you to get out of this, and then you have them do the exercise, then it's up to them to, like, figure out, oh, okay, now I know why I'm doing this, and I know what I need to do going forward so that I can achieve this in my competitive lift.
Absolutely. And, you know, having been an athlete in whatever you're coaching, I think is hugely important, if for no other reason that you can more effectively communicate what that athlete should be feeling at any given moment in a lift. And, you know, I think there's so much discussion of, okay, well, where should the weight be over the foot? Well, someone can't, you know, while you're doing a snatch or a clean, you can't pinpoint your center of mass, right? What you can do is feel where the pressure is on your feet. And even that is hard to do in a quick movement, right? Yeah. So it's more like, okay, when you first break off the floor, you're probably going to feel a little more pressure on the balls of your feet. I want you to feel, you know, balls of the feet and heels during the rest of the pull. You know, whatever the case is, you know, I want you to feel as that bar passes your knee, you should feel tension on your hamstrings and glutes and back because your shoulders are in front of the bar. You know, so being able to communicate what an athlete should feel versus what a lift should look like is so much more effective because they can't see what they look like. They have to kind of translate what they feel into what they think that looks like.
Yeah.
Right. And so they can watch videos of themselves. The best is if you can get that instant feedback like we were talking about. They can do that with video to some extent too if they know what they're looking for. But, okay, I just did this lift. This is what I felt. Now, what does that look like when I'm doing it? And as a coach, you can say, okay, that's what I want your lift to look like. Tell me what you felt. And then you can reinforce that. Okay, well, what I felt was that, you know, my weight was here on my foot until this point, or, you know, whatever the case is.
Yep. I love that, man. That's amazing advice. Okay, guy, big question time. If you could alter the space-time continuum and give young Greg Everett one piece of advice about training and or life, what would it be?
Whew.
Big question, man.
That's the hardest question of the night. I think it would be to kind of stay reliant on the fundamentals over everything else and really trust them. And I think I've done a fairly good job of that, but it is so easy to get distracted by fancy stuff or new stuff, to the point that you forget the most important basic things. You know, am I continuing to get stronger? You know, these basic metrics that I can use to evaluate progress, you know, are those things actually improving versus what's a new weird exercise that I've never tried before that I should add to my program, you know? And that's the big downfall of social media and the internet these days is, you know, people see all this crazy weird stuff and I must need that. That guy's good versus, well, no, you probably just need to kind of front squat, back squat, pull, snatch and clean and jerk, and maybe some variations and keep getting better at those things first. And I don't know. I guess you could, if you wanted to get creative, you could apply that to life in general.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. You know, yeah, I'm there with you. So last but not least, I've got our lightning round. Okay. So we got four questions. You can be as short or as long with your answer as you'd like. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Number one, hopefully this one's easy. Who is your biggest influence with regards to Olympic weightlifting?
Mike Bergner, overwhelmingly. Yeah. And he was incredibly welcoming and generous to me at the time that I was kind of getting serious about the sport. You know, basically I told him one day, hey, you know, if I move down there, would you coach me? And he said, yeah, sure. And I'm pretty sure he didn't believe I was going to do it. And I did it, you know, a month later, I'm down there. And he figured out how to allow me to live in his sister-in-law's house that they were going to remodel. So they weren't currently living in it. So I wasn't paying rent for the first few months I was there. I was just kind of taking care of their dogs and the house.
Nice.
And he, you know, he really helped me like that. And he was very generous with his time, and really mentored me in the whole thing. And so I 100% without that experience, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now.
That's awesome. I love hearing that. And I mean, I think so many of us in this industry probably have somebody like that, that influenced us and made us kind of want to continue to give back when we became coaches ourselves, you know?
Absolutely. And I think one of the sad things about how the kind of weightlifting in particular, but just training in general, is that fewer and fewer people are willing to talk about where they learned things from.
Yes.
People want to, you know, pretend like they just spontaneously materialized as experts.
Right.
And that's, I think that's kind of a sad state of affairs.
For sure. Okay. Number two, and I ask pretty much everybody this, what book or books are you reading right now?
I am reading The Placebo Effect and Matterhorn.
Ooh, what's that?
Matterhorn is it's a novel about the Vietnam War written by a guy named Carl Marlantis, who was a Vietnam vet. If you've seen the Ken Burns Vietnam documentary, he's one of the guys that's interviewed quite a bit. Really good book. I'm about three quarters of the way through that. And The Placebo Effect is pretty good too. It's really largely about, you know, kind of controlling the way you think of things in order to affect, you know, genuine physical change, but of course, you know, mental and emotional change, largely kind of focused on physical health, but it applies to just about anything. And so that's a really good book.
Man, I didn't even know Ken Burns had done a documentary on Vietnam.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I
love that. I love pretty much any World War I, II, Korea and Vietnam kind of documentary stuff, I'm all over it.
I'm having flashbacks to U.S. history as a junior in high school, and I think we watched his Civil War documentary every day for like an entire month.
Yeah, his documentaries aren't short.
Oh my gosh. That's well done.
For sure. Yeah.
So well done. Okay, number three, back to lifting. Of the three lifts, what's the hardest to coach? If I make you pick one,
I would have to say the snatch. Although I would add the caveat that it really varies among lifters.
Okay, that's fair. But why do you say the snatch?
Just because I think it's the most technical. It requires the most precision.
Okay, that's true. Okay, last but not least, number four. What's next for Greg Everett? What do you got coming down the pipeline? What are you excited about? Anything?
Well, let's see here. Pretty much just trying to continue doing what I'm doing, which at this point means more and more video content, since that's just kind of the way the world is going. I fought it for so long. It's really hard for me to get excited about making videos. So more of that, in terms of coaching, I've got a lifter named Amanda Braddock, who's actually Canadian. And she's got a very good shot of making this Olympics. And so I'm really excited about that. She's an awesome athlete, really easy and fun to work with. And so I'm very much rooting for her. And that would really be a great, thing to accomplish in my career. So, other than that, really it's just trying to kind of take a little bit of a step back and be able to kind of enjoy life and learn how to not become overly stressed out with the various obligations that I've put on myself, while still being able to, you know, do a really good job with the work I'm doing and you know, keep people happy and and you know, kind of stay the big resource that we are.
Yeah, man. That's awesome. So I'm going to ask two questions here. Number one, you've talked about video. Where can people find said videos at? Like, where are you posting this stuff? Is it on the gram? Is it YouTube?
Both. It's these days I primarily make them for Instagram.
Okay.
And then I'll put either the same thing or slightly extended versions on YouTube. So they're short videos, but which is funny because initially I was like, oh, this is ridiculous. You know, how can I get anything across in 1 minute? And then being forced to do it made me really learn how to kind of become more and more concise.
Yes.
And yep. Learn how to communicate those things better. And I think, honestly, I enjoy that more now. So if I want to do something that's really complex, I'll write an article because I can write an article as long as I want. No one's going to read it, but I can write it.
Sure.
And so that's the good thing. And a lot of the feedback I've gotten is, oh my gosh, thank you so much for these videos. You just said in 1 minute what everyone else takes 20 minutes to explain.
Right.
So that's been kind of fun. Yeah. Although I complain to my wife all the time, like, I just spent 3 hours making a 1 minute video. This is stupid.
Yeah, man. But it's valuable. You know, I guarantee people are watching that stuff. Well, that's great, man. And you've been awesome to chat with. So that kind of covers the video. In general, where can my listeners find out more about you and what you have going on?
CatalystAthletics.com is the portal for everything I do. So that website will have all my articles, all the YouTube videos, everything else. It has a huge exercise library that has, you know, video demos, but then also information on how to do the lifts, variations, how to program them. That'll give you a link to the podcast I do with Ursula Garza, all that stuff. And then Instagram is really the social media that I'm active on.
Yep.
Facebook's kind of like a dying platform at this point, and rightly so, if I can be so bold. Twitter, read links to other news things and like certain things that upset certain people. And I'm not putting a lot of information out on Twitter, but so Instagram is just at Catalyst Athletics.
Perfect. Well, I'll make sure we get those in the show notes. And man, I'm with you, my guy. Like when I started, I hated Instagram and loved like Facebook. And then I started hating Facebook. So then I loved Twitter. And then I started hating Twitter. So now it's Instagram. And, you know, the other two don't get much love. But yeah, man, I know I can say this, like people love video content. And that's one of the great things about social media and the internet today is just the wealth of information that you have access to now. So, man, I'm sure people appreciate it. And, man, I appreciate you coming on the show today, man. This was great.
Thank you. I really appreciate you having me on again.
All right, guys, that does it for this week's show with Greg. Sincerely hope you enjoyed it. He's one of those guys we hadn't caught up in a couple years, but it was really fun to just, you know, shoot the breeze a little bit, talk training, and I mean, we just always have like this really good back and forth. So it was great catching up with him. Hope you got a thing or two from it. If you did, two asks. Number one, if you haven't already, what are you waiting for, my friend? Let's get this done. Subscribe. Doesn't matter. iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, whatever works for you, works for me. If you're already subscribed, number one, I appreciate that. Number two, can you help me out on iTunes, whether it's rating the show, whether it's giving a review, possibly both would be swell. Anything you can do to help support the show, help promote the show, will definitely help us grow and continue to take this thing to the next level. So my friend, again, thank you so much for your support. I love and appreciate you, and we'll be back soon with our next episode. Take care.